Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm your host, John Cook, and I'm joined today by Haley Orr in MUFG's Capital Markets Strategy Group, as well as Todd Gray, head of MUFG's Ratings Advisory Group. It's Thursday, July 29th, 2021. Welcome to the podcast, Haley and Todd.
Thank you, John.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, great to have you both. So last week, MUFG's Capital Markets Strategy Group released a new presentation entitled Credit Rating and Accounting Perspectives on ESG. I'd like to take the opportunity to go over a few of the key points of the piece in today's podcast. Why don't we start with how rating agencies are incorporating ESG analysis into their credit rating analysis? I'm curious how this has evolved over time and what we can expect in the future.
I'll take that, John. So the three major rating agencies, which include Moody's, S&P, and Fitch, have been actively addressing ESG risks over the past several years, updating their rating methodologies and developing scoring systems in the case of Moody's and Fitch. Rating reports for companies now include dedicated sections that address ESG risks by each of the rating agencies. So if you go back 4 to 5 years ago, there was very little mention of ESG, but now with the heightened focus from investors and regulators, this has helped push the topic up front and center, and the rating agencies have now been very actively addressing and reviewing these risks.
Okay, so I guess the follow-up question there is, what impact will this have on corporate ratings?
While the rating agencies are very actively publishing ESG scores and updating their methodologies and including this dedicated analysis in their rating reports, the rating agencies have always factored these types of risks into their analysis, and therefore no changes to ratings are expected in general as a result of these initiatives.
Okay. What about, have rating agencies identified large risks from ESG factors? And Haley, why don't you take this one?
Sure, happy to jump in here. As Todd said, we're not expecting credit ratings to actually change as a result of these heightened ESG, the way that they're calling out ESG in a more clear way. But what we are seeing is very clearly identification of ESG-related risks. And I think Moody's does a really great job of highlighting these in what they publish as their environmental and social heat maps. These heat maps are essentially an assessment of the credit materiality of environmental and social considerations on a sector-by-sector basis. In their most recent heat maps that were released at the end of May, Moody's identified 16 sectors with $4.3 trillion worth of rated debt facing heightened credit risk from environmental factors. And then on the social side, they identified 18 sectors with $9.7 trillion in rated debt. It's important to note that this is a large increase in both categories, and that increase is mostly associated with heightened risk of regulatory change or social pressure to reduce greenhouse gas emissions ahead of the UN's climate conference in November, the COP26.
Thanks, Haley. So you discussed Moody's. I know S&P offers an ESG evaluation in addition to its credit rating process. How are these different? And are corporates expected to undergo both processes?
So the ESG evaluation is an in-depth analysis of a company's ESG strategy and an opinion of a company's readiness for ESG risks. It provides scores for each the ESG and an overall ESG score. A difference between this and the ESG analysis that's included in an issuer's rating reports is that the ESG evaluation is extremely in-depth. It's also discretionary, so each company can choose to whether they want to have it or not, and there is a separate fee involved for the ESG evaluation. While a company is typically expected to have an S&P rating on its bonds, it is not expected to have an S&P ESG evaluation. Companies that are requesting ESG evaluations are typically doing so to highlight their ESG efforts to the investment community or because they are issuing a form of a sustainability financing, they may benefit by including an independent ESG evaluation.
Got it. Well, shifting gears, Haley, you note in your recent publication several changes in accounting standards that pertain to ESG. Could you discuss the key developments that may impact corporates?
Absolutely. So over the last 18 months or so, we've seen important shifts from accounting standard setters internationally and also from auditors. But I think it's important for us to view this in the broader context of the global shift towards mandatory disclosures, particularly as it relates to climate risks. Just to name a few, in the UK, we've seen an announced mandate for corporate TCFD disclosure. In Europe, there's already a mandate for disclosure within the financial sector, and additional disclosure requirements are being discussed for the corporate sector. And the US is moving towards its own form of mandatory disclosures, with further developments expected on this in the coming months. So as governments push for mandatory disclosures, you're seeing investors more specifically push companies to incorporate climate and ESG risks directly into their financial statements, not just as standalone reports published alongside their annual reports. So it's really two types of disclosure. You have these annual disclosures as it pertains to scope 1, 2, or 3 emissions, but then you're also looking for the integration of ESG into financial statements and financial planning. We've seen specific guidance in response to some of these investor demands now from the International Accounting Standard Board, as well as from the International Auditing and Assurance Standard Boards. And in the US, the Financial Accounting Standard Board recently published an educational paper that looks at the intersection of ESG and financial accounting. That paper in particular, I think, is very helpful as it highlights some of the impact of that ESG may have on specific accounting calculations. For example, the impairment assessment for goodwill and indefinite lived intangible assets, the inventory assessments, and assessments of future cash flow assumptions for long-lived assets, particularly relevant as regulatory dynamics and consumer behavior may impact future revenue assumptions. So the bottom line is we're moving towards a world where more disclosure is expected. This will come in the form of scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions data. It will come in the form of corporate diversity and pay statistics, but it's also going to come in the form of the expectation that companies start to integrate ESG assumptions and risks into their financial planning and reporting processes.
Yeah, there's so much new here. So I really appreciate you both taking us through this. And I would say to our listeners, I definitely encourage you to check out this publication, again, entitled Credit Rating and Accounting Perspectives on ESG. Haley, Todd, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.